Hello, my name is Daniel Nenni, founder of SemiWiki, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders podcast series. If you have a topic you'd like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. My guest today is Jack Kang of SiFive. As a member of the founding team at SiFive, Jack oversees the business development, customer experience, corporate marketing groups, and he's responsible for strategic business initiatives and partnerships, technical pre-sales activities and post-sales support, and corporate messaging and campaigns. Prior to SiFive, Jack held a variety of senior business development, product management, and product marketing roles at NVIDIA and Marvell. He has a long track record of successful large-scale design wins. He also has over 20 U.S. patents from his time as a CPU design engineer. Welcome to the podcast, Jack.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
First question we asked, Jack, is, you know, what brought you to semiconductors? I mean, do you have an interesting story to share with us?
Yeah, actually, it kind of circles back around to how I ended up at SiFive. So growing up, you know, as a kid, was always interested in technology, and kind of the math stuff came naturally, you know, quote unquote, easy for me. So the technical something was always the plan. But when it came time to, you know, go to college, I went to UC Berkeley, and figuring out, you know, are you going to be more on the hardware side or the software side? You know, for whatever reason, I decided, you know, hardware was the way to go because I didn't want to just make dots on the screen because it seemed fake to me. I wanted something that I could touch and feel and hold. But even on the hardware side, you know, there's a wide variety of stuff that you can do. And at UC Berkeley in the EECS department, they actually had kind of a general track where you didn't have to specialize in anything in particular. So I took classes in communications and device physics and chips and circuits and software and everything. And, you know, that's where I realized that I was actually not good at math, because you take those communication classes and you're like, okay, I have no idea what's going on now. Like you do a problem set and the answer was negative 42 pi I. And you're like, that could be right. I have no idea. So, but anyway, it turns out that I had a pretty good mind on digital design and it came naturally for me. But what happened was during one of the summers, while I was in school, I was looking for some sort of internship or something to do during the summer. And out of the blue, Dave Patterson, very famous professor Dave Patterson, invented RISC computing, emailed me out of the blue and asked if I wanted a job over the summer to help him revamp the computer architecture class, because I had done very well in that class the semester previous. And I guess the teacher had recommended me to him. And not only was that like, yes, like I wasn't even going to ask him. Like, he was so far beyond my radar because he was so famous to ask for something, for him to come out of the blue asking me if I wanted to do this. And then, you know, the cherry on top was like, do you want to be paid? I was like, sure, I would have done this for free. But that really then just really kickstarted both my relationship with Dave, but then also just getting deeper and deeper into computer architecture and CPU design. So, you know, kind of fortuitous. So then when I graduated from East Berkeley, I was at a small IP company, but then I ended up a CPU designer, basically because of that class work I'd done with Dave, a CPU designer at Marvell. And Marvell had an ARM architecture. So I was actually designing ARM-based CPUs when then Marvell acquired Intel Xscale and combined two of the CPU design teams in the world. Back then, it was very rare for people to design their own CPUs. So there were not that many places to get CPU jobs. And I was very lucky to be part of one that acquired the other. And that's how I got into CPU design. Then I was doing CPU stuff, eventually moved into the business side, you know, Marvell and NVIDIA. And then many years later, when SiFive was getting founded, and I was approached, and it was this RISC-based thing, and the people who started it were at UC Berkeley doing RISC-V stuff. So even though I didn't overlap directly with Yunsup and Andrew and Krista at Berkeley who started this, the genesis of all of their work was back when I was there. So it was a very full circle moment in terms of like, oh, this seems like it was destined to happen. It's everything coming back together to do CPUs. So that's kind of how, you know, go in with an open mind, and sometimes you just get really lucky.
That's a great story. Thanks. You know, it's clear that RISC-V is in a lot more than embedded designs now, you know. So how is RISC-V being used in high performance applications like in data centers?
Yeah, I think this is a great achievement. And if you were at the RISC-V summit just a few weeks ago, you saw everybody talk about like RISC-V is coming, RISC-V is coming. And what they actually meant was RISC-V is coming in all these high performance applications in the center of the systems, because it really mirrored the exact same energy and what people were saying maybe 4 years ago at the RISC-V summit when they said RISC-V was coming, RISC-V was coming. And what they meant then was it's becoming a thing that's going to exist in the world. And it turned out that it existed first in the world in all these embedded spaces, right? So Qualcomm mentioned they've shipped 1 billion cores. Samsung mentioned that, right? It's being used by NVIDIA internally in their GPUs that are not visible to the outside. So all these not visible embedded design wins are in the many billions of RISC-V cores shipping. And that has established this baseline that everybody understands that, oh, it is a really good architecture. It can be commercialized. It has a lot of benefits. People know how to use it. So the natural next thing is to get both higher end performance and into these ecosystems that require more software and more software support. So we are seeing RISC-V in many applications to come in data center, in consumer, in these spaces. So for example, Google Android has announced, you know, official tier one support for RISC-V. So once that happens, I think you'll see lots of consumer devices that use Android as their baseline being able to use RISC-V in the application side. In the data center, we see the same thing because fundamentally, one of the things that RISC-V has proven that people see is the ISA being clean, compact, modular, and just frankly new leads to significant power performance benefits in general. Now, it still depends on the implementations. You need to have very good implementations, and that's where, you know, a lot of companies are putting in a lot of resources. That's where Sci-Fi does it, but it gives this underlying base where you can have better performance, better power. So where do you want better performance, better power? Well, everywhere, but in places like consumer battery stuff, in places like data center applications. And the other thing is, because RISC-V is then extendable and customizable, you get a lot of more targeting of your core for the application. So as we get into kind of the data center applications, targeting it for what they specifically want to do, which gets into some of the AI training and AI inference and these new applications that are coming, RISC-V is a very good platform for them to do that, especially as the software ecosystem continues to rapidly increase at an exponential pace. So what I think we'll see is similar to how a few years ago people were saying RISC-V is coming, and then now we see it all in embedded. You know, everybody right now is saying RISC-V is coming into these applications. So over the next few years, you're going to start to see more and more of this. And it's this giant exponential snowball effect, because once the software ecosystem is enabled, people see more hardware, then more software is enabled. And this is this very virtuous cycle that we've well exceeded the activation energy on. So you're going to kind of really see the ecosystem here grow tremendously in all sorts of new applications. Anything new will be built on RISC-V.
I agree. I was at the summit, and, you know, I was really impressed by the presentations from China.
Yeah, I think China is a great example of an area where there's just lots of companies building new chips and new applications being used for. And kind of, I think the key point here is anything that's new, in my view, will lean towards RISC-V, because you have the ability to target it. You have the ability, it has a fundamentally better base, and it has the fastest growing ecosystem. So I think it's just a reflection of the maturation of the semiconductor market and industry in China that, you know, of course, everything that they build there will be on RISC-V, and they're a big contributor to the open source ecosystem as well. So a lot of the software, a lot of the open source, you know, Linux upstream things come from companies and individuals in China. And I think this global collaboration around standards, around open source, will drive the whole industry forward much faster. So I think that's where you're going to see new things come from, you know, all parts of the world.
Yeah, I agree. What about RISC-V in aerospace? That was brought up at the summit as well.
Yeah, so I think this is an area that ties very nicely into the ecosystem that I just discussed. So I think one of the things that's known is, you know, Sci-5 together with Microchip is in a NASA next gen space computer. So one of the reasons it's very good for aerospace is if you look at things that are in aerospace, they need to last for many years. So think about something that you want to put in a satellite or a rover that gets sent to Mars or beyond, or in a satellite, you know, these things have to, you know, will not launch for multiple years, and then have to exist for multiple years behind. So what you're really looking at is, what does the ecosystem look like a decade from now? What does it look like 2 decades from now? Will I have people who know how to program for this? Will there be more software written for this? Will it be easier and easier to use, or will it get harder and harder? You don't want to be on an ecosystem that will be abandoned or is very niche, and then you can't get support for it. So they're thinking very long term. And so the two things that I think seeing RISC-V has success in aerospace, seeing Sci-5 has success in aerospace, that people should take away is, first, it's not just about cost. Generally, these markets are not very cost conscious. They're not making decisions based on like what's the lowest cost. And two, so that means the technical is very good. And two, they really have a much farther view of like, what is the ecosystem going to be looking like 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now? And I want to pick the ecosystem that's going to have the most support for it. So that gets to RISC-V, this shared ecosystem, this main benefit everybody's going to have. And it's just like, you know, both technically and long-term ecosystem is better. So I view aerospace as a result of all the factors that's making, you know, everybody adopt RISC-V and Sci-5 solutions.
I agree. So how are the computing demands of generative AI changing processor design?
Yeah, I think I would expand that to not just generative AI. I think generative AI is obviously very, very important, very, very hot. But if you actually look at what happened, in my view, it's like a reflection of how quickly the quote AI market or the AI technology is evolving. Right, a year ago, you probably would have asked me this question, but instead of generative AI, you might say like, you know, CNN networks or, you know, neural nets or something like that. Then it became transformers. And it's like, so the key here is there's so much innovation in this space. The algorithms and the best way to do this, the most efficient way to do this is actively changing. So the key in our view is having a programmable solution that's still very efficient. It's very difficult to have fixed function accelerators in this market because the algorithms are just changing way too rapidly for, you know, the length of time it takes to build hardware and solutions for that. So if we look at that from a processor design standpoint, it's about how do we enable the flexibility of that processors provide, which is that software programmability and ability to do different things while still adding in certain components that we know these type of algorithms are going to need. So things like vector processing is a key element to this, things like different data types, right? Matrix multiplications, right? So combining the programmability with certain hardware, certain additional capabilities is really, to me, the very important blend to enable this to continue to evolve in a very robust way. Otherwise, you're going to end up with a lot of fixed solutions that ultimately don't work. So I think many startups a couple years ago were just trying to do fixed solutions for convolution neural nets, and they all had to like put out of business or had to pivot. So the programmability is very important. So particularly when it comes to then RISC-V programming, providing a common programming environment, whether it's scalar CPUs, vector CPUs combined with, you know, accelerators, but using the vector engines and the RISC-V baseline tools for programming. That's how we see customers using this. And we see kind of wide adoption in this. One of our most, you know, popular products, if you will, is our intelligence line, which is our wide vector machines that have some special interfaces that let customers add in some of their own hardware engines. So then you get the blend of the hardware engines with the programmability of RISC-V with the vectors that enable kind of the pre-processing, post-processing, the future-proofing, if you will, of the changing algorithms.
Interesting. Can you talk a little bit more about the advantages of vector processing?
Yeah, so vector processing is quite interesting. It's in a way, it's made a comeback now with all the things that happen in AI, but it's not a new technology, if you will. It's really something that was started, you know, even back in the Seymour Cray days with the Cray supercomputers, had a lot of vector processing. But at its core, vector processing just enables processing on wide amounts of data in a very efficient way. It's different than SIMD in that it's much more flexible. The programming is different in that you can have a same programming stream and you can have different hardwares of different widths. So you don't need to fine-tune it so much to be like this machine, this hardware is only a certain width, but you can use it kind of more generally. So now if you have RISC-V vector general software, you can have vector libraries that can run on different hardware engines. And then depending on the hardware engine width, you can get different performance levels of that. So it tends to lend itself very nicely for what AI needs, which is, you know, a lot of math calculations, matrix calculations of and then the other thing with vectors is you can do it with different data types, which is also a very important and nice element for AI. And it's kind of ironic, if you will, if you look at, you know, Kirst Dasanovich, who was a professor at UC Berkeley, one of the co-founders at Sci-Fi, his PhD, you know, 30 plus years ago now, was vector processing for AI applications. So it was kind of just ahead of its time, if you will, and it's kind of came back right now at a very nice time where it's very needed for these new algorithms. So I think this is one of the most important things about RISC-V is actually the vector engine, the vector extensions, and the vector capabilities of it.
So, you know, ARM is a big part of this. And what's your personal perspective on the ARM IPO, and what does it mean for the RISC-V ecosystem and the community?
Yeah, I think ARM is a fantastic company. And I think we have to give ARM a lot of credit for actually, you know, creating the CPU IP model and market that is important and necessary. So in many ways, the ARM IPO, I think, has just brought a lot more positive attention to what does it mean for CPUs, or what you need CPU IP, what's the difference between IP and chips? I think that's actually very important for people to realize. So I think at a whole, it actually helps the RISC-V ecosystem in that explaining to folks the need for this solution in the market. And then I think then in the market, you know, long-term, to me, it's very clear that there's going to be three ISAs that matter, and it's ARM, RISC-V, and x86, and they're going to coexist, and in different markets will use different things. And, you know, we'll have market competition as time goes along. So, but I do think that what they've done, you know, really has brought a lot of eyeballs positively to what's happening with RISC-V. Even if that wasn't their intention per se, but I think that that has helped.
Yeah, for me, it's the transparency, because we get to see more of what's going on inside ARM. You know, they were very transparent, you know, since they were founded, and then they went under, you know, undercover in SoftBank. And now it's transparency. You know, we're going to see how the business actually is and growing and stuff. And I think that'll be good for RISC-V, because it's, you know, a good barometer, right?
Right. Absolutely. I think that's, like I said, it brings more eyeballs to this whole kind of market space that, you know, to me seems very straightforward, but I think, you know, realize to others that, you know, IP versus chip is not something that everybody understands. So I think that's actually quite helpful.
Yeah. Speaking of that, you know, let's talk about what's going on with Sci-Fi. So what's next for Sci-Fi?
From a Sci-Fi standpoint, you know, we are the leaders in RISC-V. We still, despite, you know, recently we had a layoff of some folks. We've grown too fast in certain areas, and we needed to restructure ourselves. We're still the largest company working on RISC-V. You know, we're very focused on doing that, enabling our customers, our partners, to deploy RISC-V and use RISC-V in their solutions. And that can be both products that we build IP, that could be things that we sort of co-design with customers or take their inputs. So it's really about growing the RISC-V ecosystem as a whole. We have a huge role to play in that. We drive many of the ecosystem things. A lot of the ecosystem development, the software stuff, is still being done on Sci-Fi hardware, on Sci-Fi boards. We need to continue to drive the ecosystem into all these different applications and into these different markets. And then along the way, enable our customers. Our customers tend to be companies who are building their own chips, either they're a chip company or these days, sometimes the OEMs themselves are also designing chips. So I'm working with them to take our RISC-V technology, RISC-V IP, and putting it in their chips. So we continue to be very focused on our customers and the ecosystem and growing the overall RISC-V market as a whole. So we view this as RISC-V is going to keep growing, and SiFive is going to keep growing along with that. I think you mentioned earlier you were at the summit, so we're very positive on the future, and it's very important for us to focus our development and our resources on working with key customers, on working on specific markets where the RISC-V products, where the products that we build are going to help our customers win.
Yeah, thanks for the clarification, Jack. I talked with SiFive at the summit, so I already knew, but I thought the audience would like a clarification, so thanks for that. Final question, how do customers normally engage with SiFive? I mean, I see you guys at all the RISC-V events. So you're very event dedicated, you're investing a lot in the ecosystem. I'm sure there are places on your website. I mean, what does a normal customer engagement look like for you guys?
Yeah, so I think this is the place where, I think some clarity on, what we do. So we provide IP, essentially, which goes into somebody who's building chips. So pretty much everybody in the world who builds chips knows who we are, or we have direct contact with them because it is a very technical business-to-business engagement with them. Our presence at a lot of these shows and public stuff is really to educate the broader market about RISC-V, to drive the RISC-V ecosystem, to talk to people like our customers. So just a simple example that might be useful for your customers, you might have a chip company that's supplying chips to like GM or Ford, like the auto guys, right? The auto guys are not building their own chip, but they're getting a chip from, a Qualcomm and NVIDIA, the Renesas or whoever. So the SiFive customers would be the chip guys because they're putting it in, but the auto guys who are receiving it are becoming more and more aware of RISC-V and why that's important for them. So they're not our customer necessarily, but they're folks that we talk to as we grow our ecosystem. But our customers directly would be the chip guys. A lot of your listeners might also be very interested in RISC-V in general, and that's where people want, usually the most common request is, can I get some silicon? Can I get dev boards? I want to do some software development, things of that nature. So we do development boards for the broader ecosystem. We enable this really to grow the ecosystem. So we do sell boards through distributors, if you will, and such that anybody in the world can buy boards. So technically, those are our customers, but I don't use it as customers in the sense of your question here. So we do have some information on our website and distributors that sell our boards. That's not our main business. That's just there to enable the ecosystem, right? Those are selling $100 boards and stuff is not how we drive our revenue and handle. That's just how we want to enable the ecosystem and be good partners to the broad base of developers who want to work on RISC-V. So we kind of view that as our one of our responsibilities as a leader in this space. But our actual customers that are part of what drives our day-to-day and our focus and large revenues is the customers who are building chips themselves.
Great. Excellent conversation, Jack. It's good to catch up with you. Let's definitely keep in touch and keep us updated on what's going on with RISC-V and SiFive. And thank you again.
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks for having me. Happy to come on anytime. I think RISC-V has grown so fast. It is really exciting, everything that's happening. So love to keep your audience updated.
That concludes our podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day.